Good afternoon. My name is Bruce Director. I want to welcome you to the LaRouche Show. We're speaking today with Dean Andromedis, who is the EIR correspondent in Wiesbaden, Germany, who's been following the Greek situation. Very exciting developments in Greek. And rather than give a big, long introduction, I would like to just get right into it. Welcome to the show, Dean.
Thanks a lot. Glad to be there.
So let's this election last Sunday in Greece, where the Syriza party won almost an absolute majority and formed a coalition with a smaller party and took power by, I guess, Monday afternoon, has really shaken up the situation in Europe and the world. So why don't you fill us in on what the significance of this election is and what the repercussions have been so far?
Okay, this is the first government that to come to power in the last 5 or 6 years since the nightmare of the bailout policy of the European Union went into effect back in 2010.
Now, just so our listeners are up to date, give us a very, very quick summary of what happened. Greece, you had the worldwide financial crash in 2006, 2007, and shortly after that, there was a big crisis in Europe, especially the southern European countries, with the most dramatic one in Greece, because of a big debt problem. So tell us a little bit about what that problem is and what got implemented right after that.
Well, the debt problem came really through the, you know, you had the financial crisis. I mean, the euro system basically went bankrupt because of the crisis we had in the banking. We had the same crisis here in Europe that you had in the United States, the so-called subprime crisis, which wasn't really a subprime crisis, but it was the collapse of the system. The governments moved to bail out the banks. And now the governments are loaded with debt. Greece was not a special case, but an aggravated case, because under the euro system, when they joined the euro, and they really shouldn't have joined the euro, but Goldman Sachs and other companies conducted an operation so they could qualify for the eurozone. And what happened is the European banks, particularly French banks and German banks and British banks, sold a lot of illegitimate debt or bought a lot of illegitimate debt from the Greek government. And a lot of this stuff is fraudulent. And they had a debt ratio to the GDP of 120%. Now, this was supposed to be unsustainable, and they had to get a bailout. So the EU, rather than cut the debt, which would be the somewhat normal procedure under the IMF, they wouldn't do that, because that would have affected the French, German, and British banks that held the debt, and that would have bankrupted the banks. So rather than cut the debt, they forced Greece to take on. At first, it was 120 billion euros, and now this has increased to 240 billion.
So to sum up, Greece joined the euro by having Goldman Sachs and a bunch of other people cook the books.
Exactly.
And then Greece got into a debt crisis, a sovereign debt crisis, where they didn't have enough income and revenue, and their economy was collapsing, so they couldn't pay their debt, and that debt was held by mostly German and French and British and other European banks. So when Greece was about to default on its debt, the ECB and the governments of Europe funneled a whole bunch of money into the Greek government, not to help the Greek people get back on their feet, but to make payments to the these European banks. So the money basically went through the Greek treasury and then got deposited in these European banks, and Greece went into deeper debt. And then at the same time, authorities in Europe and the IMF demanded that Greece cut its government spending, so it had to implement massive austerity. Is that a fair summary of the process?
Yeah, sure. This is what happened. Now that unsustainable 120% debt to GDP ratio is now at 180%, and it cannot be paid. It will not be paid. And the Greek people have elected a government that will say no, and that's why they were elected.
Now, despite the fact that they were loaned all this money, they went deeper into debt. But what was the effect on the Greek people? Tell us a little bit about the actual living conditions of what happened as a result of this largesse of the European governments financing this Greek debt. Well, who actually paid for it? The Greek people, right? In the form of massive austerity.
Well, what has happened is that the economy has collapsed by more than 30%. Official unemployment went up from something like 8% to 28%, and actually unofficial employment is in reality 50%. Youth unemployment is an impossible 65%. People had their pensions cut between 25% and 45%. Government workers had their salaries cut by 25% to 40%, and now the private sector has had their salaries. Majority of people in the private sector have had their salaries cut by 20% to 40%, and many people aren't even being paid for months at a time. The health system was totally destroyed. It was cut by 25% to 30%. People who are unemployed do not get, they run out of their insurance payments. They then do not get any health insurance, and they get no health care. So this has created nothing less than a humanitarian catastrophe. The hospitals and the insurance programs, the health programs, don't have the money to buy sufficient medications. So there are people who have cancer and cannot get their cancer medications. The death rate has actually gone up. The child mortality rate, the infant mortality rate, has gone up, and the situation is dramatic. The pauperization of the population is dramatic.
And this was all done in the name of fiscal responsibility, right?
This is the so-called reforms. This is to become competitive. It's euphemistically called as an internal devaluation, and it's a catastrophe. And the population. Under an occupation, under the World War II occupation, the population decided to say no, we're not going to take this any longer. It cannot get worse if we fight this, and they have elected a government, and this government will say no. They wanted a government that would not be intimidated by pinstripe suited bankers. They call it in Germany a Schreibtischtäter. These are bureaucrats in the Nazi period that sent people to the concentration camps. This government's not intimidated by these people. They're certainly not intimidated by the Dutch finance minister, Joran Dijsselbloem, who was literally thrown out of the prime minister's office and thrown out of the country and told that the Troika, which is the IMF, the European Central Bank, and the EU, this is the team that oversees the so-called, what they call it, the memorandum, which is the orders that the creditor, the debtor, the creditors give to the government to cut the budget and implement these reforms. And this government yesterday said that they will no longer allow these people back into the country. And not only that, all the advisors that have come and been placed in the ministries to oversee the process, they are told to pack up their bags and go back home, and that the Greek government itself will implement appropriate reforms that they see as appropriate for this situation. And they are now implementing an emergency program to relieve the country.
Okay, so we want to hear about that, but tell us a little bit about Syriza. They're a new party. Their head is Alexis Tsipras. Is that right?
Well, they're not a new party. This is what's, to look at the process that's going on there, it's a mass strike process. Now, Syriza is a party that's almost 20 years old. It was normally getting in the elections between 3% and 4%. The party is mostly leftists, former members of the Communist Party, and they were a very small party. But once the memorandum and the austerity and the so-called reforms started, I mean, this touched off a mass strike process that started within 6 months of the program. And this party, Syriza Party, became the only alternative, not the only alternative, one of the major alternatives to the ruling parties that accepted this memorandum. They didn't accept it. Now, that's one party. The other party is the Independent Greeks, which actually came out of the former ruling party called the New Democracy, and that was led by Panos Komenos. And he took a whole group of parliamentarians who also refused to back the memorandum and created this new party. So the party before 2012 didn't even exist. And they had elections in 2012, and Syriza almost won those elections. They had gotten 26%, and the ruling party only got 28% at that time, and the Independent Greeks got 7%. Now, there are other parties. The big problem is that there's a fascist party called the Golden Dawn, but they oppose the memorandum, but they're a fascist party, and no one wants to have anything to do with them. Now, Syriza, this time, this election, got more than 36%, which is a tremendous achievement. This gave them, in the Greek system, 149 of the 300 seats in the parliament. The Independent Greeks got close to 5%, which gave them 13 seats, and the two parties formed the government. And this government now is beginning to implement their program. And if you look at it, these aren't really young people. I mean, if you look at the cabinet, you could see that this is a cabinet, as I said, that's going to say no. They are older people, or I should say people fully in their careers. Many of them are, although they're communists, they're extremely well educated and well qualified for the positions they now have in government. So they're competent, but even more important than just being competent, They have an attitude and a commitment to carry through these policies, one of my friends in Greece who knows these people quite well, and we know some of them, Panos Komnenos spoke at our conference here in Germany, our large Schiller Institute conference on the Silk Road and the BRICS. And he spoke at that conference, and he spoke about his support and the work he has done to create alliances between Greece, Russia, and China in particular.
So that's a very important point, which I want to get into in some depth. So you have, because it fits in with the overall strategic crisis, and LaRouche was talking to this morning about the strategic crisis that we face in the world, which is a Wall Street-centered financial system. And by Wall Street, we can include the European EU financial system, is bankrupt. And this is basically run out of London. And they are committed right now to driving the world to the point of war in order to prevent, because they want to go to war before they go bankrupt. And you see this crisis building up specifically around Ukraine, but it's just Ukraine is just the pretext, and you basically have a showdown in Ukraine, which the Greek crisis is really just part of, which is a showdown between this bankrupt EU Wall Street, London financial system, and the BRICS process. The BRICS countries, of course, are Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. They're doing all kinds of very extraordinary things in terms of economic development. They've set up their own banking system. They're looking to have a complete shift away from this money economy into a credit economy. I guess the most advanced thing is this China lunar program. And here are the Greeks, which are part of the EU, part of the Euro system, but the Euro system is actually killing them. And so now they're standing up to the Euro system, this small country. And you just said that they have some commitments or connections to the BRICS country. So why don't you tell us about that?
Well, just two things. One thing before I get to that, because it's related to what you said about the financial crisis. The main policy of this government, one of the main policies of this government, is to have a European-wide debt conference. They're saying that it's not only the Greek debt that has to be cut and dealt with, but there's the debt of all of the European countries, most particularly the other countries that have gone through the same bailout process as Greece, which includes Portugal, Ireland, Cyprus, to a certain extent, Spain, and several other countries. And all the countries have a debt problem because it's directly related to bailing out the banks. So that's what they're calling for. And then what they're saying is that the debt has to be dealt with the way the London Debt Conference dealt with the German debt in 1952 and 1953. In that conference, Germany's pre-war foreign debt was cut in half, and the payments were extended, and payments were made only out of the surpluses of their trade. So if there wasn't a trade surplus in that year, there would not be any payments. And that laid the basis for the German economic miracle. And they want to have a similar conference.
Let me just interrupt. That was possible because the situation at the time in 1953 was the end of the post-war period, and you had just had the Bretton Woods system set up. So who took the haircut on that debt? Was it just written off? The banks in London and Wall Street who held that debt just ate it?
What happened? It was an agreement. The governments handled it. The governments represented the private interests. it was decided as in a negotiated process. And what happened was there were two things. One is you had the Bretton Woods system, but you also had the Glass-Steagall system still in place. So you weren't dealing with derivatives based on this debt or anything like that. Another thing is, the other most important thing is, Germany had what was called the credit, still has it, but doesn't function the same way, the credit Anstalt für Wiederaufbau, which is just like the Roosevelt's Reconstruction Finance Corporation. And the credit Anstalt took credit from the Marshall Fund and used that to reconstruct the German economy, which was the motor of the European economy. So the Syriza conference, what they want to do is settle the debt in a similar way. And they want to what they're saying is the European Investment Bank, which is one of the EU organizational banks, which finances, it's a small bank. It finances projects on a project-by-project basis. But they're saying this should be expanded dramatically and used to launch a new deal. And they're very interested in infrastructure, connective infrastructure, similar to our program that would integrate Europe into the Eurasian land bridge. Now, both the parties in the government, both the independent Greeks and the Syriza, support Glass-Steagall. They call for bank separation. Now, the issue has not come up directly yet, but in our discussions and in our publications, we just last week published an article asserting that at this conference, if a conference like this is held, the first thing on the agenda should be the implementing the Glass-Steagall system in Europe, all throughout Europe.
It would have to be implemented throughout Europe, right? Because the Greeks could pass a law saying they're going to have Glass-Steagall, but what difference would that make if the
That's the whole question. The question is, at this conference, every country decides to go through the process of Glass-Steagall and begin dismantling the too big to fail banking system, which is at the heart of the European financial crisis. And what could happen is a bank that could be called, let's say, the European Infrastructure Investment Bank, could cooperate directly with the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, just created by China last year. Now, so on this level, this government is on the same wavelength as what Mr. LaRouche has been calling for. Now, on the political level, in terms of the BRICS, I can honestly say that I believe that Greece could be the first European country to join the BRICS, given this government. You'll be very hard to try to find someone in this government who doesn't want to improve relations with Russia. They are all pro-Russian. Russia is an Orthodox country like Greece, and there's been a long-term relationship between Russia and Greece. And key ministers in the government have specialized in this. An example is the foreign minister. The foreign minister was a professor at Piraeus University, and his expertise was to establish courses on the BRICS, particularly China and Russia. And this is important in Piraeus, because in Piraeus, the Chinese have developed the container terminal there and has made it its major transshipment point for cargoes coming from China through the Suez Canal and heading towards Central and Eastern Europe. And the Chinese now are trying to cooperate with all these countries to develop the rail link between Piraeus and Central Europe. And this government supports it. Another case in point is Panos Komnenos, who's now defense minister. He was the person who actually negotiated the agreement with China to lease the Piraeus container port. He did this when he was a minister in a previous government back in 2007. And he also is very close to the political party of Russian President Vladimir Putin. He is trying to make his party the sister party of the United Russia Party.
Mm-hmm.
Another case in point is the energy minister. The energy minister is a longtime member of the Syriza. To give you an example why these guys can say no, this man, when he was a student in the 70s, opposed the military dictatorship that ruled Greece at that time, and he had been arrested, thrown into prison, tortured. People like the president of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, do not intimidate people like this.
Right.
So he's energy minister, and the first thing he did was reverse all the privatizations in the energy sector. Now, this is important because Greece gets 90% of its gas from Russia. And Russia has already made a deal with Turkey to create a pipeline from Russia through Turkey that would come right up to the Turkish border and enter Europe through Greece. Now, Russia did this because the EU sabotaged another pipeline that should have gone through Bulgaria. That was the so-called South Stream. Now, the fact that the Greek government has stopped this privatization of its gas company means that it would facilitate cooperation with Russia on this gas pipeline. So you see, we have things are in place. Another thing I should mention on the Russian case, the Russian finance minister 2 days ago said that if Greece asked Russia for a loan, they would certainly consider it. And a few days before that, actually before the election, the agricultural minister of Russia was at an event in Berlin, a food fair, and he said that if Greece had to leave the Eurozone, Russia would import its food. They would make a special agreement with Greece to import its food, which is very, very important because Greece is a very big agricultural producer. And when Russia, in retaliation for sanctions, banned agricultural products from the EU, Greece suffered tremendously. Their agriculture exports are something like $500 million a year, much of it going to Russia. So I think that everything is really in place for Greece to get itself integrated with the BRICS, and the desire is there. One more example is Egypt. My friend told me that the biggest delegation of foreign journalists that covered the event, the elections, were from Egypt, because Egypt is very, very interested in developments in Greece, because they are themselves expanding dramatically the Suez Canal and developing an entire logistics center around the canal. And since many of the Chinese ships that come through the canal are headed for Piraeus, there has to be a cooperation and a coordination. There's also cooperation already on the economic zones, the offshore economic zones, particularly for hydrocarbon development, because the Greek and the Egyptian zones border each other, and there have already been agreements on cooperation. It was funny. I mentioned this to an Egyptian, a very sophisticated Egyptian, and she looked at me when I said this, and she smiled. She said, "Well, we've had good relations with Greece for 5,000 years," and that's the point. That's the point. Greece has always been part of Eurasia. It has always been part of this region of the world. It has always been integrated. It's a country, you know, the European Union put it at the end of Europe, when in reality it's at the beginning of Europe.
Right, because the future is in the East, not in this dying transatlantic system.
Exactly. So
Syriza took office the beginning of this past week. And immediately there was this showdown, or meeting, I guess, is another polite term for it, with this Dijsselbloem you mentioned, the Dutch finance minister. And who was he representing, and what was the purpose of this meeting, and what happened? Why don't you tell us about that? Because I think that sort of captures the dynamic of what you said, that these people are not, these are hardened fighters here for their ideas, and they're not intimidated by Eurocrats.
Well, Dijsselbloem is a Dutch finance minister, and he is the chairman of the what's called the Euro Group of Finance Ministers. So this group meets; it's the group of the finance ministers of the respective countries of the Eurozone, and the all the loan agreements, the memorandums, were negotiated in this group. And if you see his picture, he looks pretty silly, and it's hard to take him seriously, but he seemed to take himself seriously. So he thought he would fly into Athens and read the Greeks the riot act, saying that, and he said, "We're not going to forget about your European debt conference. You have the Euro group. That's where you can talk about it. Forget about a debt haircut. You have to keep to your commitments. If you don't implement the reforms, then you're going to be in big trouble." So he went into Athens, went to the meeting with Tsipras and the finance minister, a man by the name of Yanis Varoufakis, and read the riot act, and they showed him the door. The meeting lasted only 30 minutes. It probably had to be translated for the prime minister, because his English is not the best, and must have been an important discussion.
Well, there was a picture, a famous picture all over the internet of Dijsselbloem sort of dressed up in his bureaucrat business suit, and this finance minister who didn't wear a tie and had his shirt tucked out. In fact, I understand that's sort of typical of the Syriza group, and I have a lot of empathy with them, that they don't like to wear ties, and I fully support that. So what's the alternative? They said, "We're not going to talk to you." Who are they going to talk to? Who are they going to negotiate with?
First, they said at the press conference, they said that the finance minister, Varoufakis, said that the troika, the representatives of the European Union, the European Central Bank, and the IMF, who come every month to review the program, he said that they could stay home we're not interested in them anymore. They're an illegitimate anti-European construct, is the way he put it. And as far as for their 7 billion euros, which is the next so-called tranche of the debate of the bailout, which the government is supposed to receive so they can pay off old debts, some more of the debt. They would never see it for their budget or anything. He said, well, you can keep that too. And I understand Dijsselbloem was a bit surprised, to say the least. So what's going to happen? It's not clear what will happen next week. As I understand, the finance minister has already gone to France to hold discussions with the French finance minister. But it's pretty clear from my friends in Greece, who are very close to the government, they're not going to stay. Will not compromise. The EU wants them to compromise, and they say, well, there is no compromise. We can't pay the debt. We can't go on with this policy. So it's really in the European court at this point, and it could very well go to the point where if the Europeans pull the trigger on all their threats and cut Greece off.
But what would that mean? Cut Greece off.
Well,
what
the first thing, the biggest threat at this point is the banking system. The European Central Bank said that it would cut off all liquidity to the Greek banks. This is the insanity of the Eurozone system. Each country's the only thing the central bank of Greece, like the central bank of any of the countries, is basically to run the office in Greece. Anything that has to do with interest rates or liquidity has to be approved by the European Central Bank.
So because Greece doesn't have its own currency, if their
it doesn't have its own currency.
If their banks need liquidity, they can't go to the Greek Central Bank. They have to go to the European Central Bank.
It's not like the Federal Reserve,
right?
So the Greek banks are dependent on about 40 billion euros of liquidity from the European Central Bank. So if that happens, they would cut this liquidity. Now, what this means, I mean, I'm sure the government in Greece has thought this through. They would obviously have to implement exchange controls, capital controls, and nationalize the banks. I mean, they have already said that they will nationalize the banks because they're basically nationalized already, because the banks have been bailed out by the government, and the government is the biggest shareholders of the bank, but under EU rules, they can't be involved in the management of the banks. So the government has been footing the bill while the banks continue their speculation.
So would this mean an end to the euro system, the Greek pulling out of the euro and introducing their own currency, going back to the drachma?
Well, they would probably have no alternative except to do that. I mean, they haven't said they would do that, but they would have no other choice if the EU pulls the trigger. Now, whether they will pull the trigger is an open question, because once the process starts, it's not going to be very easily reversed, which is to say, if Greece is forced out, then other countries are going to leave.
Which other countries?
Almost any one of them. Big candidate would be Greece. Would be Italy, Spain, Portugal. Not under the current governments necessarily. Even Germany. It's not out of the question. But you would have a situation where there would be the end, basically the end of the Eurozone. I mean, the situation in Europe is in the hands of let me say it's let me put it this way. Greece is just the first country that has gone through this process. In Spain, there's a party called Podemos, the new party there. They're sister parties with Syriza now. They had a very large demonstration in Madrid today. They had, I don't know how many people were there, but they were expecting 100,000. There are local elections in Spain in May. They could very well win those elections. There are national elections at the end of the year. They're expected to win those elections. In Portugal, the Socialist Party, which is out of power, is expected to win the elections in Portugal in October. And that party is under pressure internally to break with the bailout system. Just today in Cyprus, where Cyprus will visit on Monday, the government there is a presidential system, but the ruling party does not control the House. And the House on Friday, on Thursday, passed a bill suspending a foreclosures bill that the Troika demanded that they implement in order to continue the bailout. And this legislation suspended that, because if that foreclosure bill goes into effect, tens of thousands of Cypriots would lose their homes and be thrown out into the streets. So the Troika has announced that the money will not be released. So in a certain sense, the bailout process has been suspended, de facto suspended in Cyprus already.
In Cyprus, so, but what about Greece? The Troika hasn't suspended payments to Greece, right?
Well, the next payment is supposed to be at the end of February, but to get that payment, they had to finish the preconditions, implementing the preconditions. So
the showdown, the stage is set for the showdown.
The showdown is, in this respect, it's passed already,
mm-hmm.
because they said the government's not going to pay it,
right?
And it will not be released.
So what's the reaction?
The government doesn't want it. So,
what's the reaction in the rest of Europe? We were talking earlier that Helga Zeppler-Rusch is there in Germany these days, and she gave some successful seminars in Frankfurt and Berlin, and also was up in Copenhagen. So what's the mood? The U.S. press today is filled with headlines with a stern-faced Merkel saying, no, 999, we're not going to renegotiate, and Greece must stick to the plan. But what's the rest of the reaction in Europe? I know that we would expect that from her, but what's the rest of the reaction?
Well, just today, the government of Spain and the government of Portugal, who have been busy implementing the bailouts, said they will not support a European debt conference. But like I say, they will soon be the former governments of these countries. So
they say they won't support a debt conference because they want to pay their debts in full, huh?
Yeah, they say we're okay. We're paying our debt and we're implementing our reforms and blah blah blah.
But with similar effect, right? I mean, the unemployment rate in Spain is huge.
The unemployment rate in Spain is in fact worse. Officially, worse than it is in Greece.
And the austerity conditions are taking their toll. So, saying you're going to pay your debt while killing your population is not a very wise policy. But what about Germany? Merkel's taken this hard line? Was there opposition in Germany to this? I know there's opposition in Germany to the sanctions against Russia, but how does these Greek developments play into that whole dynamic?
Well, it's in Germany. I mean, our organization, of course, has been mobilizing, and we've had these seminars, and also in Germany, you have a party called the Die Linke, the left party, and they're the sister party of Syriza, so they're fully mobilizing in support of the government in Greece. But the problem is, there is a problem. There's a tremendous propaganda in the media against Greece. And this is having effect on the population to a certain extent. But the point is, there's a lot of discontent in the population, particularly sections of the population in the East that have suffered under the current economic conditions. And on a higher level, in terms of the business community, there's as you mentioned earlier, there's and particularly among the farmers, opposition to the sanctions. This is sort of brewing there, and if you look at the coalition also, this government is not the government that signed all the loan agreements for Greece. This is a different government, in the sense that the Christian Democrats are now in alliance with the Social Democrats. Before, they were in alliance with the Free Democrats, which was the neoliberal party. So within the Social Democrats, there's also discomfort now with Merkel on particularly the war question, the war danger with Russia and the sanctions. And I think what you're going to see is the coming together of these two issues, the opposition to the sanctions and the war danger, the aggressive policy against Russia, and the financial crisis and this crisis that around the Greek question. Because, you know, it's hard. It's like I say, if Europe pulls the trigger, right, and cuts off Greece, can they treat Greece as if they were Saddam Hussein's Iraq? You know, this is in the middle of Europe. This has political consequences.
Well, also that
all these countries,
the real beneficiaries of these payments to Greece are German banks, right? So if they cut the money to Greece, then the payments don't get made to the German banks. What happens to the German financial system, which is already bankrupt, right?
Well, it's a little different, but in principle, yes. In principle, yes, because what we're seeing is the collapse of the euro system, of the too big to bail banking system,
right,
which is based on maintaining these policies. You can't compromise on these policies and maintain their system. And this is what their dilemma is, right?
And that's why I say
the ball is in the ballpark of politics at this point.
And that's what's driving the war threat, right? That is
right.
The threatened collapse of this whole. It's kind of ironic because here you have the EU and the Obama administration talking about how they want to orient Ukraine towards Europe and away from Russia, and they're saying similar things about other former Warsaw Pact countries, Comecon countries like Poland and Bulgaria, Romania, the Baltic states, and so forth, and saying these countries all have to orient towards Europe. And when you look at Europe, you see a collapsing financial system, which has absolutely nothing to offer. And when you look eastward towards Russia and China and India, you see tremendous potential for growth. So why would these countries want to orient towards the EU, which is falling apart, instead of orienting eastward. And I guess that's the choice that the Greeks are making right now, to look eastward instead of towards Europe.
Well, what is important is that this government does see itself also as being part of the necessary change in Europe. And that's the way they put forward their policy. They say the policy is not, you know, the problem is not Greece. The problem is a European problem, and what we're proposing is good for the Europeans. Will be good for the Europeans because it's the only way that we will get an economic recovery in Europe. But the other, you know, the big question, though, for our listeners in who are listening to this program at this point in the United States, is what we do in the United States. Because what Greece can do, and even what Europe can do under these conditions, is limited unless we get Obama out of the White House and implement Glass-Steagall.
Well, and that's what LaRouche was stressing today, is the two things we have to do in the United States is destroy Wall Street and dump Obama. And because those are the two things that are really driving the United States behind the war danger, behind this war with Russia. Now, you're beginning to get a lot of backlash in the U.S. to the war drive, but there's still a significant amount of drum beating as long as Obama's in the White House and continuing to push this. Today or over the last couple days, it was announced that proposed that the United States offer over $1 billion in lethal military aid to Ukraine. And if you look at the fighting in Ukraine over the last few weeks, it's escalated, and it's been escalating solely on the part of the neo-Nazis who are running the Kiev government on behalf of Victoria Nuland in the U.S. State Department. So this thing is getting quite dicey here. Now, let's turn back to Europe, though. What about, we've talked about Germany, we've talked about Spain. What about in France? LaRouche has been talking a lot about the shift that's happened in France since the terrorist attacks there on Charlie Hebdo, that there appears to be potentially a shift on the part of Hollande. How's that look to you from that, your vantage point?
Well, I would step back a little. You don't get 6 million people out into the streets as had occurred in France last month, unless there's ferment in the population already, or something's going on in the population already. And in France, for the last year, the French government has not kept any of its election promises. And up until very recently, the Hollande government has basically been doing everything to maintain the euro system, the austerity, and has not changed policy, and that has led to increased unemployment, increased suffering among the working people in France. So, and these attacks, you know, sort of intersects this discontent. And on the other level are the sanctions. The sanctions against Russia. And in France, also the Gaullist military establishment also opposes this. They see the danger of this confrontationist policy. So this all comes together. and it also, so when we have this emerging crisis, now that the Greek government has come to power and is saying no to the Troika, and saying no to this policy, this has an impact on France. Now, from what I read today, Holland had a meeting with Merkel and a man called Martin Schulz, who is the president of the European Parliament, who met with Tsipras on Thursday, and they discussed the Greek situation. And it's reported that France wants to play a mediating role between Germany, which is taking the hard line in the EU, and the Greek government. Monday, the French finance minister will be meeting with the Greek finance minister. So it remains to be seen whether this would mean a change in policy, or whether it's a continuation of the hard line we have seen so far.
All right, and let's turn finally to Britain, because there's an anti-Euro movement in Britain too, an anti-European movement in Britain. So is there some backlash in Britain against the Troika, the EU, and a move there? Or how do we read that?
Well, Britain isn't in the
not the Eurozone, but there's an anti-EU movement.
Well, we'll soon find out very dramatically, because in March there are British elections. Now, in Britain, of course, you have a party called the United Kingdom Independent Party, UKIP, and they're the so-called Eurosceptic party, and they're somewhat anti-immigrant, and they are expected to win seats in the national parliament. They've been in the European Parliament for, I believe, two or three terms with sizable delegations. But under the British system, they have not been able to, only recently have they been able to break into the national parliament. They actually now have two seats in the national parliament, because two Conservative Party parliamentarians resigned from the Parliament and from the Conservative Party, joined the UKIP. Under the British system, if you resign your seat in the Parliament, there has to be a new election for that seat. So, of course, they ran in this by-election, and they won the seat. So now they have two parliamentarians who are very outspoken. And they are, as I say, they are expected to win more seats, and they could possibly be the swing party, because it's a real possibility that once again the Tories, the Conservatives, if they win, or if the Labour Party wins for that matter, they will not have enough seats to have an absolute majority, and they would have to form a coalition government. Now, Cameron, the head of the Conservative Party, has promised a referendum on whether the British should stay in the Euro, in the EU. So, if he wins the election, he's going to have to implement this referendum, if British population vote to leave the EU, then this would be quite dramatic.
So we have less than a minute left, and I think it's just this has been very helpful for our listeners to try and understand what's going on. But to conclude, put it in a little bit of a historical context, because this is something LaRouche has warned about, both Helga Zepp LaRouche and Lyndon LaRouche, for some time, that this dying transatlantic system is going to go under LaRouche predicted the collapse of the euro before it was even born, that this system would never work, and it hasn't. And now we're at a point where either we let this thing collapse and put it under reorganization, or they're going to push for war. And we're really at that point, and people really need to stand up and join with the LaRouches and make sure we do the two things that LaRouche is talking about, which is to dump Wall Street, dump Obama, and then implement LaRouche's four laws. So I wish we had more time to discuss this, but I know there's going to be a lot more developments over the next few days, and we look forward to having you back. So thanks a lot, Dean, for joining us on the today's show, and listen to us next week.
Okay, very good. Thank you.